everybody. This is William Van Pilar. This is Fired Up. And the resistance has begun as Democratic governors push back against Donald Trump, who's yet to even take office. Is it political posturing for 2028, or is there something really there? Spoiler alert, there's nothing there. First up, California is rebelling. We are pushing back. We finally toughened up on crime. And we'll also discuss if Trump has a mandate, who are the true misogynists and racists? We discuss and you decide. And in between, we'll have a little bit of fun today with what's happening on social media. So before we get going, let me remind you to like, share, and subscribe to this video. Well, we originally had a special guest who had a good emergency came up for the guest. And right now we're stuck with G. Mangani, our regular co-host here. And we're still waiting on Miss Annette here, who's trying to get in. And once she's in, we shall pop her in. Mr. G, are you still celebrating there with our
I am. I am. And we had a celebratory lunch today with our re-elected school board member Annette Ross and a couple other school board members who are good people. They got elected. And always, we toasted Donald Trump, our 47th president.
I know. It's so funny because I'm so accustomed to 45, and now it's 47, you know. And we also have who you do not see on screen, who we always ask on eventually sometime in the show, is our producer, Big John. So we can hit him with a 1-2 punch. Big John is not a big Donald Trump fan, so we can hit him with the 45 jab, then the 47 jab.
I'm guessing he's not a Kamala fan, so he should celebrate that Kamala did not get elected, right?
I guess it's he does not believe in what he calls the lesser of evils. I believe every case is different. I will not vote a rhino anymore, but when it came to Hillary or Trump, I held my nose and voted for Trump and have not regretted it and have become – I'm like J.D. Vance, you know. It's like that was one of Big John's big takes here. Well, J.D. Vance hated Trump. I'm like, so did I in 2016. Then I saw his policies. I saw the numbers. I saw the damn data. Yeah. And anyway, I'm sure he'll pop his head in here before it's said and done. So let's have some fun. To the national audience here. As California goes, so does the country. Thank God that hasn't been the case for the last 10 years, but that's how it used to be. But we need you to follow our lead because I'm going to talk about the one, the only, the infamous Cubano, who is a hardcore leftist, Jorge Gascon. And first of all, I want to give a little bit of silent props here to Miss Karen Roseberry, my very first host. Jorge George Gascon was our very first topic on the very first Fired Up. And she actually was part of the recall. For those of you not aware, as I'm talking ahead of myself here, George Gascon is the progressive Los Angeles County District Attorney who was promoted, pushed, and subsidized by George Soros. He lost his bid for reelection in a very significant, big-time defeat to his challenger, Nathan Hochman, who is a Republican. Technically, that is a nonpartisan race, if I'm correct. Am I correct on that, G?
I believe so.
Yeah. But as in school board races, city council races, other races, it's very partisan. So for Hochman to sit here and not only win, but win significantly, that's a massive sign. So for those of you wondering who Jorge Gascon is, let me pop in a picture here of him. You know, I have everything ready here to go except for the share screen one with all my videos and all that. But here is a picture of Jorge Gascon. He's the guy on the right, as all Republicans are. We're all good looking. There he is on the left. This is his opponent, Nathaniel Hochman. Yeah, I got to be honest, G. Man, oh, Jorge. I call him Jorge because his name is George and he's Cubano. But George there has kind of aged a lot in a couple of years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a dirt. I mean, that guy looks like he's been in the ringer and lost a couple times. And on a side note, we'll get to it here. So my question to you, the nation, will you follow suit? We threw him out of office, and I'm speaking to you, Philadelphia, with Larry Krasner, and New York City with Alvin Bragg, who is doing an injustice right now to Mr. Penny there, who helped people on the subway, and now they want to throw his ass in prison. So, again, he lost his bid for re-election in a significant defeat. The election results, Hoffman did emerge as a clear winner. It was 1.1 million votes compared to Gascon's 690,000. So that's a 62 to 38%. In political land, that's a beatdown. Any comments on how big that beatdown was, G?
No, that's the kind of beatdown you get when you're trying to run in a, let's say you're a Republican running in a deep blue district. You're going to lose 60-40. That's about right. And 70-30 is, I mean, you don't even try to run. You're just a sacrificial lamb if you're a Republican. So, yeah, that's a big beatdown.
And yeah, and for the audience, this is all L.A. Is it L.A. County or L.A. City? It's L.A. County.
I would imagine county, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not talking about a blue district. You're talking a blue region there, literally. So that speaks volumes. And that's a decisive victory for Hochman and a decisive rejection of not just Gascon, but we're done with crime, or actually that region is. Now, Gascon took office in 2020. He was riding that progressive wave of activism that came about because of the murder of George Floyd. His tenure was marked by reform, as in he's not going to have any justice. It became even his assistant DAs, half of them quit because he was that bad. He prohibited the death penalty and sentencing enhancements. He halted the prosecution of juveniles as adults. And people, y'all don't see this, but there's a lot of deaths out there that are just brutal murders. And then it's like, yeah, he's 17. You're like, oh, dear God, but he's a juvenile. You know, and every single one of his reforms were controversial. They were all met with considerable opposition, even from within his own office. So, when he first entered, what were your first thoughts in terms of what you saw, what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, I wondered how L.A. was going to turn to the downside. And, you know, I look at, we've talked a lot about in previous episodes of what's happened, let's say, in Santa Monica. That's really turned into a major hellhole. I lived there for about 3 months over the summer of 2019, I believe it was, 2018. And it was beautiful. Santa Monica was just amazing. And then I'm watching videos now of that area, and it's just overtaken by homelessness and drugs and crime and people getting stabbed on the beach. I mean, it is nuts. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the lack, you know, prosecution of criminals.
No, I agree. So some of the factors for Mr. Net, we are talking about Jorge Gascon, the Cubano who betrayed us. He betrayed everybody except for the criminals. He was, if there's a saint for criminals, he was it. So some of the issues that contributed to his defeat, obviously public safety concerns. Hoffman ran a brilliant campaign. You know, whether it was brilliant or not, doesn't matter. Everybody wanted him gone. So he just had to show up, really. But it capitalized on the constituents' concerns about crime and homelessness, as you alluded to, G. He had opposition from all the law enforcement. Now, that said, there were some high-profile cases that also hurt him because he was lenient. And then the most high-profile case of them all, the Menendez brothers. He was like, yeah, they need a new hearing. Please vote for me. Please vote for me. He was hoping to capture that TikTok crowd, that youth vote in L.A. And November 29th, there will be a hearing on the Menendez brothers. There were two recall attempts. What's that?
I said hashtag free them.
Exactly. Yeah. Hashtag free them. I just spoke about the Menendez brothers, a plug for my Red, White, and Rude, which will be out early next week. I do specifically talk about Gascon and the Menendez brothers there, and I'll break the case down. But that said, he faced two recall attempts, and rest in peace to my former co-host, Ms. Karen Roseberry. That was our first podcast, and she led the recall, but she was a grassroots conservative, and they had to have their rich, white, elitist suburban woman who came in with the power of the Republican Party, the state Republican Party, and shoved her out. They demagogued, they demonized, and they took control to what? To spending a couple million dollars that went nowhere. They hired outside firms that didn't even get the proper signatures. It was a screw up from day one. And then the second week I was just as bad. Those were more grifting activist programs. You know, I'm a conservative, but I will call the Republicans out too. It was nobody wanted Gaston in there the second time, the second recall. They just too lazy. They were grifting outside forces. They did not care about recalling their Gaston. They cared about earning their money with all their donations and and ignoring the signature. So he got off two recalls because of the ineptitude by our California Republican Party. And somebody who watches this is going to go, William, they weren't involved. No, not officially, but they were involved in the background in making it happen and then destroying it. Crime statistics, while the link between Gascon's policy and crime rates are disputed by criminologists. My notes say there was a perception of rising crime. No, there was rising crime. What happened is felonies were dropped to misdemeanors. Cops were no longer arresting people. And three, businesses were being told, do not stop calling us. Stop, you know, in fact, in one of our producer, Big John, he has his own libertarian podcast, Free for All. I was listening and I just had to chime in and I sent them some information on how it's not LA, but Sacramento, how a Target employee was calling Sacramento. We're being robbed. And twice, the second time, the office said, if you keep calling us to report this crime, we are going to prosecute your ass. Stop calling us. You know, we're going to, so crime was up. I just realized my beautiful mic here. Crime was up, but yet statistically speaking, it was down. So, for you two here, Gascon's loss indicates a change in public sentiment on the criminal justice system. We get that. Based off what I said, the data out there, are people like me looking at it wrong? It wasn't the crime rates or the revolving door of offenders and policies perceived as too lenient, but that just Gascon had a rough time in handling it. Or do you think, you know, him trying to be nice, he just mishandled it? What I'm trying to say is, was Gascon maybe over his head, or was he purposely doing this? We'll start with DG, then we'll go to Miss Annette.
I don't know the approach to crime. That's not my expertise, but people look at results, and that's what voters look at, right? They look at whether neighborhoods are getting safer, or they're getting more dangerous. And that is very clear when you go to Target and now things are behind plexiglass and you're trying to buy household goods and it's behind plexiglass. Maybe it's CVS, Walmart, whatever it is. And you're sitting there going, wait, is this place that dangerous? And there's another, when we're driving long distance, I use the Starbucks, indicator. The Starbucks indicator to me is, I need to go to the bathroom, and where on this freeway do I stop? Well, I'm going to stop at Starbucks because I know those guys have done their homework to know this is a safe neighborhood. My employees won't get robbed or mugged, so we're going to build a Starbucks here. So that's an indicator, right? People look at plexiglass and go, oh, this is a really bad neighborhood because now all my milk is behind plexiglass. Or, you know, my detergent. I mean, surprisingly, detergent, medicine, behind plexiglass. And so you look at, well, in LA, who's in charge of prosecuting criminals? And that must be a result of his policies. So whether he needs to go, you know, less lenient, you know, more tough on crime, I mean, that's obvious. What that means practically, I don't know. I'm not law enforcement, but I think it's obvious just by looking at the effects.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there, Mr. G. And in terms of like your anecdotal way of looking at it, that's how most people look at it. Outside of the people actually getting mugged, robbed, and killed, you know, they probably look at it a little bit differently. Miss Annette, do you think I'm trying to be fair here to Gascon? You know, I believe he's a bum.
Why?
Okay, so that's how you're looking at it too. It's like he was purposely making the revolving door. It wasn't that he was just overwhelmed.
Did you see on Substack Nellie Bowles, is that her name? Bowles. She's a really, really good writer. But basically what she said was right before Trump got in, she did her last wave of going to, because she's a San Francisco, going into the local Walgreens and raiding it and, you know, crossing the border a few times. You know, she was basically saying they've just been so loose on all of the things that make citizens feel safe and secure. And she just drove the point home in using San Francisco as an example. But, I mean, L.A. is not that much different. Gee, you mentioned Starbucks. Now some Starbucks up there, you have to get a code. You know, you can't even go to the bathroom, right? In the neighborhoods that are a little more dicey or, I guess, maybe really busy or not as safe, they make you get a code. They don't want people in there, the homeless people going in there to, like, I don't even know, washed up or whatever it is that's happening. So I think that he earned his stripes here for sure.
They go in the bathroom to juice up on drugs.
Yeah, right. That's what they think.
Missing that, you know, he opened the door for them, and then two recalls. I mean, he lost 60 some out of 40 some odd percent here. I mean, they wanted him out. But I kind of gave you guys a scoop as to why I think the recalls failed. But what are your thoughts on two failed recalls? Meaning, he was using that to say, hey, the people still love me, they still want me. Yet he got shellacked this time around. And then the Menendez brothers. One, what do you think of him surviving two recalls? And is the Menendez brothers, was that just a ploy to try to salvage his campaign here?
For sure. Because you're right about that. He definitely knows what I know. My daughters are always talking to me about the Menendez brothers, and so are all their friends. They're like, Mom, you've got to, you know, again, hashtag free them. They just think that the punishment did not fit the crime based on these documentaries and things that they've read and the timing of the case. And we could go on and on because they have a whole entire show about that. But why did he get through those recalls? You know what? I mean, this might seem like a lame answer, but I think apathy. I think people have to get really charged up. I was even surprised, even today, William, looking at actual number tallies and counts of votes for certain areas. You know what I mean? You'd think that maybe more people, they maybe did in the general election, but more people would get involved in some of these things. People are fired up in this 2024 election, but those recalls, maybe people just felt like they were apathetic to it and did not get that involved. I think apathy has played a role for a pretty long time. But now, I think people started to feel like Trump had a chance, and this was like a moment to like seize the day. And they thought, maybe we have a chance here to make some real changes, and these changes will affect our day-to-day lives. So I think that is part of, you know, why.
I agree. There is a lot of apathy, and that was how I think the state party was able to come in and take over. There were only a handful of people, and that's just how politics tends to be. Mr. G, your thoughts on the Menendez brothers and Gascon and the 2 recalls?
Yeah, so there was talk here locally about potentially recalling an elected official, and they decided it's too hard, too much of an effort. You need 25% of signatures of the registered voters. And you're doing it off season, right? Like election time is November, and people are too busy with their lives. So I think the ones who are going to be motivated to, you know, oppose the recall are his supporters. So they're going to turn out in mass. So I think that's what happened because, you know, now you look at November, he's getting voted out, booted out. Menendez brothers, I have a different take on that. So on Netflix, 2 specials came out, one in August and one in October. And I watched it because I kind of thought those two guys, you know, murdered their parents for money. And then as I'm watching, I'm like, wait a minute, there was a lot more going on. And then I'm putting myself in their shoes going, if that was happening to me and I'm 18 years old, you know, I'm not that kind of a person, but is it beyond me to go, I need to get out of this in any way possible because this life is hell and misery. And so now I go, okay, well, maybe they serve their time. Maybe they're good people and whatnot. And maybe Gascon decided, well, this is on the, okay. So what my point was, if the Netflix series came out a year ago and now Gascon saying this in October, that would look very politically motivated. But this really came on the heels of those 2 shows. And there's this TikTok trend of, okay, free these guys. So if you ever have another show on Red, White, and Rude, I would love to be on that to talk about this because I was pretty lit up and my whole viewpoint on the Menendez brothers was changed. So Gascon doing this, was it a political thing? I think there's enough people out there who go, those guys killed their parents for money. So I don't think that that helped him, actually. I think that hurt him.
Oh,
well, there's a big TikTok movement. I talked about that today in the Red, White, and Rude. There, it was a TikTok movement, and I also talked about the Netflix portrayals, and I gave it a thumbs up. Watch it, you know, and very well done. But what you got to remember, too, is there's TV and there's reality. And, you know, a lot of their stuff is sketchy, and it's sketchy because of their own words, him getting busted. Saying, yeah, I'll lie on the stand. You know, and he was great. Boy, I mean, I was a kid and I remember that testimony, the first trial. I mean, it worked. That jury was like, oh, and that's why it was a hung trial. And they did get screwed the second trial because the judge said, no, you're not bringing that in. That was their whole defense. So I, from the get go, kind of always found it funny. How can they get a fair trial? Aren't we all about a fair trial? And the judge just said you can't do this in the trial, and that's your whole defense. Even as a young teenager, I was like, whoa. So I'm not against a trial. And it did open my eyes. But I think all that is apples and oranges. I think it's a big event that's in the news again, and Gascon saw some way to capitalize on it. I think what you're saying, how it affected you, is completely – I think he was using that. Using those feelings, that's what's happening because of the social media. It's a TikTok / Instagram movement. I think he was using that, hoping to get some votes out of it. I don't think he probably thought he was this far behind, but it did not help it. So, Gascon's defeat is a significant setback for the progressive prosecutor movement, particularly on the West Coast. We in Chauvin or whatever, he was taken out a couple years ago, he was a Soros backed one. So it follows Chesa Boudin in 2022. And again, it does suggest a shift in public opinion towards a more traditional approach to criminal justice. And I say Los Angeles in my notes, but literally in California, you know. So before we move on, let's take a pit stop as we enjoy the November 6th. Was it 6th? Today's Thursday. Yeah, November 6th victory here. And we're waiting for some of these individuals to leave the country. They promised us they would leave, did they not? Let's take a moment to enjoy Mr. Cohen, formerly Trump's fixer.
Wow, genius you are. Can we stop with that? I appreciate it. I don't like the stupid turkeys. All right, let's just knock that stupid shit off, please. All right. I did. I said I was leaving.
So I didn't realize he can see what they're doing to him, and it's driving him nuts. So So every time you see the thumb going there, he's blocking somebody. But it just keeps going on.
And then the following day, get that through your dumb heads. The following day, I turn around and I said that there's no chance in the world that I'm leaving my country. Thank you very much. All right? I'm not leaving anyway. You leave. This is my country.
Now, I'm not sure if you guys saw what he's talking about, but they asked him, so what do you do? I'm getting my passport. I'm leaving here. I don't trust them. They're going to come after me. Yeah, you know, he was just all in, and like, and the way he said it, he sounded like a scared guy. And this is him, I guess, saying that he's not leaving.
And I have every right, every single right, within which to turn around, would we stop so we can? All right, 2 seconds, I'm going to end up blocking this idiot.
Oh my God. And he can see all of that. So that's just a little moment in time for us to enjoy. Let's get down to some, I don't want to say this is boring to the audience, but it's important to the audience. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but as California as it goes, so does the nation in a lot of this. I want to talk a little bit about some of these California bonds. The first one is Prop 2 public school bond. I think we actually talked about that in the previous podcast. Pardon?
We did once, yeah.
Yes, yes. So the public school bonds, it was a measure on the California ballot that would authorize the state to issue $10 billion in bonds for the construction, renovation, and upgrade of the public school and community college facilities. The measure would allow for repairs and new construction. And the supporters said, hey, we need this. We need to update our learning environments. We have to support our technical education, talking about the community colleges. And the critics were concerned about more state debt, more tax implications. And they framed the debate as one in balancing educational needs with fiscal responsibility, especially in light of changing enrollment trends and existing budget priorities. The reality of it is they've mismanaged our budget, and they're asking us to foot the bill to take care of this, and we don't even know if this money will eventually reach it. Sadly, it passed 57% to 43%, 57% of precincts. It's probably been updated since I took this notes. Gee, what are your thoughts on this passing? Just a couple of comments here real quick.
Yeah, it's the mismanagement. They should be able to operate within their own budget. And the fact that they don't, they're beholden to teachers' unions, and they get ever higher raises, bigger pensions, and then the schools literally are crumbling. And so I think that the schools need to live within their budget and not look to Sacramento. And Sacramento, I mean, what was it? I can't remember the prop. I think it was Prop 28 came out with increased funding for musical programs. So we get this money and we're trying to figure out how to use it. And it can only be used for musical programs. So we're grateful that we got it.
Something new right. too. That was another caveat. Yes.
Right. But then it's like, well, we could use this money somewhere else to help shore up this part of it. Public's going to go, well, it's for the kids. And so it's going to pass.
Exactly. Ms. Annette, your thoughts on this?
Same thing. It seems like it's for the kids, and that's what tugs at everyone's heartstrings, except what they do, and I don't even know all of the fine lines in this, but I've seen just from being on the board for the 4 years, what G said is true. They'll say, we're going to give, we love music, we love the arts, we're going to give these schools money for these kinds of things, right? And then what happens is they put so many, things around it that it's like, oh, no, but we can't. We can't do something that's existing and enhance this existing program. It's got to be a new program. Well, maybe your old program is actually the thing that needs a facelift. So I think it's really unfortunate the way these things go down, because it probably is true the infrastructure of some of these places needs a little bit of a boost. But you don't know in the end how it's all going to go. And so what happens when I saw it was like, it says, in the fine line, who's for it, who's against it. When I saw the unions were for it, I'm like, oh no, I don't like it.
It's because that's union way, union jobs for union, everything else. So yeah, it's a sad day. Okay, so let's move on to the climate. Proposition 4, environmental bonds. So in other words, though, before we move on, that's a loss for the greater good of California, because the kids, I'm sorry, there's plenty of money there. They just mismanaged it, and they're just coming back for more money. This is just one of next go around, there'll be another bond. And then another bond.
Oh, my gosh. William, though, I thought of you so much today. I somehow ran across a really angry woman on television who is mad at all the Latinos who voted for Trump.
We're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. I got you covered, sister.
Environment.
Proposition 4, the environmental bonds. It's a $10 billion bond measure aimed at funding various environmental and climate projects in California, including water infrastructure, wildfire prevention, and coastal protection. Now, this all sounds nice and good, but there's money already there that they squander away and use on other issues like illegal aliens, their own pet projects. It's going to cost us $400 million over 40 years with interest $16 billion. Oh, my God, $400 million, all the interest $16 billion. That's incredible. It's the party stance, Democrat Party and environmental groups obviously support it. Republican Party and fiscal conservatives do not. This passed as well. 58% to 42%. Again, this is yesterday's stats, 57%. So maybe by some miracle, some of these will turn around. But right now, I'm hearing it has passed. Mr. G, your thoughts on another green project sucking up more dollars?
Yeah, this is putting on the credit card. I mean, obviously, they can't find it within the budget. This is so important to them. They can't find it within their own budget to say, okay, let's put some money towards this. No, they got to put on the credit card, and my kids, grandkids, they're going to have to pay for it. It's just absurd.
I agree. What about you, sister? What do you think of that?
I mean, I'm just going to put it in the microcosm of San Diego because I'm sure the same thing is happening all over the state, that they're mismanaging our water. I mean, first of all, they have a problem with this one dam down here around Lake Hodges or whatever, and they're dumping all this water into the ocean. And they said that this year we have more water than we've ever had before in San Diego County. And what are they doing with it? Dumping it into the ocean. And what are they doing with the other parts of it? They're like, oh, we don't really know. We're going to, like, give it back to the Colorado River. We had a meeting. I think she was there for at least one of them where they were talking about water. You were there, right, G? And when you hear that, though, all you can think to yourself, as you become more educated, because I'm not that involved with water, but this is what they're talking about with the environment, and you think to yourself, wow. You know what we're doing, though? What I think we're doing, William, is I think we're always making up for their shitty investments. That's what's happening. We're always paying the tab for them to make their investments that fail and the ideas that fail, but they never get to lose any money, and it's always on the people, and we pay the tab for their losses all the time.
Absolutely true. No argument for me there. So we're all thinking it's just another boondoggle, in essence, for more projects that enrich people.
Yeah, they don't know, though. The people don't know. That's the thing. The message isn't out about some of these things.
You know, I agree. All right. Proposition 5, affordable housing. Proposition 5 is a California ballot measure that would lower the voter approval threshold for local affordable housing and infrastructure bonds from 67% to 55%. The narrative for the debate is framed as balancing the urgent need for affordable housing with concerns over increased taxes and local government debt, and touches on issues of local control versus state level housing. The party stance, Democrats, love it. They favor the measure, say it's going to facilitate funding for critically needed affordable housing projects, yada, yada, yada. Republican Party, they oppose it, citing concerns that it will lead to increased property taxes for homeowners, weaken taxpayer protections against excessive local borrowing, and potentially making housing less affordable. Let me cut to the chase. This is starting the demise of Prop 13 that protects our property taxes from going up to insurmountable levels. This would allow them to circumvent that and to be able to use different ways to raise our property taxes. California is already too expensive to live in. This would have thrown people out of their home. It happens all over the country. People lose their homes because they can't afford property taxes. Our prices are already inexorbitantly?
Which one? Exorbitantly high.
Yeah, exorbitantly high, people. Exorbitantly high. Yeah. And, we finally get a win. No. 56%.
Yes, 44.
I'm like, I'm looking at my notes. I screwed that one up. Yes, 44. So, go ahead. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, keeping the bar at a supermajority vote is important, right? Because then now you have to really get the buy-in from a lot of people to make sure that affordable housing that is built is really needed. Whereas lowering that threshold, then you can, you know, squeak by when you get like a temporary majority in favor of it. So I'm glad it's not in the past.
Miss Annette, your thoughts?
Oh, you know, my heart. I was like, it all sounds so good, doesn't it? Because I just.
Oh, yeah.
The American dream, part of it is having a home. So anyone who's going to say to me, like, I want to, like, make a housing more affordable and someone can live the dream. But the thing is, it's all packaging. You open up the box and it's empty.
That's true. Well, my take is people are going to lose their homes.
Yeah. Right. The reverse is true. Yes.
Yeah. We do not have affordable housing in California. We will never have affordable housing in California, because affordable housing in California, it's the middle class that can only afford to move in there. You know, so it's just terrible. But we got to win. It was a big no. So now here's one for prisoners. Prisoners are going to unionize. They will say more pay. Prisoners. That's what Proposition 6 is for. It's the Involuntary Servitude for Incarcerated Persons Amendment. You know, they title these to where you don't even understand what it means. But it's a measure that would amend the state constitution to remove the provision allowing involuntary servitude as punishment for crimes. In essence, we couldn't use the prisoners to do work. And I'm sorry, You're paying the price of society. If they want you to build a bridge, if they want to put you in a chain gang, I'm all for that. I'm sorry. Maybe I've seen one criminal too hard. To me, you broke the crime. That's part of law and order. Aren't you bleeding heart liberals? Maybe they shouldn't have broken the law. You know, for you libertarians who disagree about law and order and want anarchy, well, if there's anarchy, that means there is no law. That means we just shoot them and kill them. So it's a lose-lose for both you liberals and libertarians in that sense. Not being sarcastic, but obviously. But it failed. Another win, people. We are rebelling here. 55%. Gosh, I screwed it. Oh, yeah, 55% to 45%. Gee, your thoughts on this. Prisoners cannot strike.
No, who's going to pay for that? I mean, I don't know what the number is. They're getting paid 10 cents an hour, right? That's what the issue is. And they're probably going to get, what, minimum wage? $18 an hour, $15 an hour? And where does that money come from? It comes from us because we're the ones collectively who have incarcerated these people because they've committed crime against society. So I'm glad it's not passing. They got to pay, you know, do the crime, do the time.
Ms. Annette, your thoughts?
Me too. Is it bad for me to say that I see no problem with them, like, whether it's, you know, cleaning up the streets or, you know what I mean? I don't know. Is that, I feel like that makes sense to me. So, yeah, I have no problem with
that. Well, it's bad. It's bad if you watch The Shawshank Redemption where that prison warden was kind of abusing that power. But that was a fake movie. I have friends in prison.
Right now, you do?
Well, relatives I've had in prison. I helped throw a guy in prison. And my family who has been in prison, and I'm talking about a couple of family members I'm extremely close to. I remember talking to my relative about it. I said, well, hopefully he'll learn something in prison. And we're talking to Panamania prison. We ain't talking to a nice old prison here. And I was more angry at him for doing what he had done. As I didn't even think twice about, well, you shouldn't be going to prison. I'm like, you screwed up. So maybe I look at it differently, but yeah. Now that said, in all fairness, I believe we have to be able to find a way to teach these individuals to be productive citizens. In my head, my fantasy for a prison, you work that chain gang 3 days a week, 4 days a week, you're in the classroom studying. When you get released, you can't go back to where you're from because the recidivity rate is way too high. So our tax dollars will be used a bit, but I'm okay with that. You know, look, we're going to get taxed. I'd rather see it used to help and not give our money away.
You believe that a lot of these criminals then can get back out and be productive members of society.
I don't know, but I know this, the system we have, it's what, 80%, is that the right term, recidivity rate? I mean, that's just way too high, you know? And I also believe some people will never change. A pedophile, you know, I just, in my heart, I believe that pedophiles can remain a pedophile. Recidivism, thank you, Mr. Producer. I think a pedophile is going to remain a pedophile. And I think once they do their time, they need to have their own communities. They need to be modern. Look, life's... We're humans. We are the most complex computer ever created.
Yes.
You know, and we have to realize we're not all the same. Sometimes our wires get crossed. See, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying our wires get crossed. So we have to deal with certain situations in a different way. You know, I mean, we have autistic kids on the spectrum, some that are autistic, not on the spectrum. You know, they're all dealt differently. I view criminals the same. You know, a kid smoking weed, getting popped. Yeah, he doesn't belong in the chain gang for the next 2 years. But that's where Kamala sent him. Anyway, did I mention already?
Actually, for you, William, that is, now that we've gotten to know each other a little bit better, that's a very, like, hope-filled statement coming from you.
I am a realist. I have a lot of hope, but I'm also a realist. And during the good times, there's a great, even during the bad times, that just means you have to work 10 times harder. I always tell people, if you start a business during the downturn and you succeed, you're going to be a big hit once the good times roll. You know, you have that perseverance. And I just wish we taught that in school and we could teach that in prison. You know, in Puerto Rico, it's not prison, but it's a prison in its own way. It's an island. When the conservative governor took charge, who they eventually threw out after 4 years, he whacked tons of jobs. he gained a lot of support from people who were like, oh my God, I was forced to start my own business, but I had my own hours. I was my own boss and my business was making me money. You know, so you don't know what you have until sometimes you're forced to discover that. All right.
Next conversation, though, I'm going to really think about this until we talk next. If you can actually teach perseverance, I've got to think about that. I can't answer that quickly, but I'm going to think about it.
John can tell you about perseverance too. We're both persevering right now. You know, he's persevering just to get through this podcast. Those conservatives. Prop 7. Okay, you know, guys, I'm going to skip this one because this one's pretty much hard to understand, and it's pretty much politics at its worst. Meaning, I'm going to take you out through a prop, and the other side wasn't a good side neither. So it's a very convoluted. Maybe we'll pick it up because it's a side of politics that is ugly on both sides. And that is Proposition 34. It was disguised as a prescription drug revenue spending. So I'm going to hold off on that one because that bears a deeper discussion. So, and we're not even going to discuss the Prop 3, which all it does is codify marriage between anybody is legal in the Constitution, and that passed too. So let's go to Proposition 35, Medi-Cal, permanent funding. It's a ballot measure that aims to make permanent an existing tax on managed health care insurance plans for funding Medi-Cal. In a nutshell, what this means is doctors do not take Medi-Cal because it doesn't pay squat. So it doesn't matter what law is passed, it's a doctor's right. I'm not going to take it. So you can sit there and say all this about the law. This is the law that forces a lot more money to go to these doctors. So there's money to actually pay them so they take on more patients than what they normally would. That passed 67 to 57. When I first saw that and read it, I misunderstood it. But and I may have voted against it, to be honest. But researching for this, I was like, oh, okay. And again, that in and of itself shows how convoluted. The politicians purposely make these convoluted for political reasons. Right now, all these long titles, all these statements, if it's a conservative prop, it's made difficult to understand. We tried taking it our side to court. The court said, hey, it's up to the attorney general, however he wants to name them, which I thought was wrong because there's abuse of power too. And that's what the judge should have ruled on and said that this was an abuse. But this turned out to be, I don't want to say it's a pretty good bill, but on the surface, it sounds pretty good. But we know how government will bleep up a wet dream, you know? Gee, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is basically putting a Band-Aid and not solving the real problem. And we could do a whole video on just why healthcare costs go up. But you're right. Doctors do inadvertently and not intentionally discriminate against people who have government-run health reimbursement because the reimbursement rates are so low. So why are they going to do that? And even on the drugs or whatnot, I think they make zero profit. So you got to incentivize people to serve one another with profit. And there has to be some skin in the game so that they will, you know, take these patients in. So you have to do this, but it doesn't address the underlying cause, and we should get to that on another video at one point.
All right, we will. We'll do that. We'll take a couple of these props that are heavier handed. I just wanted to give Californians and the nation there a quick blip through. And I kind of regretted it when I said we're going to do there were 9. I should have probably broken it up into 2 episodes here. But then, you know, the sad thing is next week nobody's going to be talking about this stuff anymore.
That's right.
You know? Okay. Proposition 36, the big one.
Something about healthcare.
What's that? Well, that's because you're a net. It's very important to you. The problem is you're a small segment of who it's important to. Most of the, again, I say this and it sounds terrible. More people care about how big Kim Kardashian's ass is than they do about the laws and propositions that really bend us over. You know, it's a sad, ugly way to sit there and say they care about things that they can enjoy the entertainment value versus getting into the weeds and understanding how these laws and propositions directly impact us and affect us. In our defense, meaning those people's defense, government doesn't make it easy to understand. I mean, look at the tax code alone, you know, as an example.
I just want to say that I think this is a way for them to force doctors into their garbage healthcare system that they have in California. Sorry.
I agree.
That's what I think that they're doing. Sorry. That's my only thing I wanted to say.
I mean, I've never asked you or even Big John who takes care of his child, but I just assume your costs are like, I mean, I don't want to get into it, but I just assume, I mean, just for a normal person like me, and gee, I mean, our costs are like astronomical.
Did you just say that I wasn't normal and that you were?
You're right. Fortunately, I mean, for people in different situations, you know, one of the first things I always thought is, oh my God, just the health costs alone. I just assume because of what you said, it's such a terrible, convoluted, rigged up system. Geez, looks like you want to say a word there.
Yeah, let me just amend that statement because I agree. But it's a way to force good doctors into a crummy system because the ones who take this, and I don't want to insult doctors who are already taking Medicare, Medi-Cal patients, but they tend to be the ones who need that. Right. So they need patients. So they're the ones serving them. So it's forcing good doctors to get into the system.
Yep.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it. And persons with lifelong disabilities, Ms. Annette. Thank you, Big John, our producer, for covering not me. That's why I would make a poor politician. If I was somebody famous, that's all they'd be talking about for the next week. Okay. So Proposition 36, increased sentences for drug and theft and crimes. Now, what people may not realize, back in 2020, they came out with a new law that pretty much made murder legal. And I'm being sarcastic, but just to show, it didn't literally do that. But that's how bad our laws became in terms of allowing criminals. So Prop 36. So the people fought back. What makes California so great is we, the people, if we get enough signatures, can put things on the ballot and they can become law. So Proposition 36 is a California ballot measure that aims to increase penalties for certain drug and theft crimes. It partially rolls back the reforms implemented by Prop 47 in 2014. I apologize, I said 2020. This goes all the way back to 2014 when they lessened the drug-related charges. The measure reflects a shift towards tougher crime policies in response to concerns about retail theft and drug-related offenses. I want to go back to Brubaker. For all you guys from the 70s, y'all know Robert Redford movie. Anyway, the party stance, obviously Republican Party conservative, generally supported the measure, arguing, hey, crime is just too high. Democratic Party leadership, I'm not saying Democrats, but the leadership, including Governor Gavin, I need to have an app to find out where I can walk in San Francisco and not step on feces, Newsom, opposed the measure, citing concerns about increased incarceration. See, it boils down to dollars in their eyes. They give us we can't, it's going to cost, prison costs too high, prison costs too high here. It's like, well, if you ask the average taxpayer, we're okay with our tax dollars going to build that up versus them to illegals. So it passed with a resounding 67% to 33% with 57%. Now, we are a deep blue state. So one third of that is probably red votes. The rest, two thirds of it are blue votes. California has had enough of the crime. They've had enough of the rapes. They've had enough of the murders. They just had enough of the revolving door and fearing for their safety in the big cities. Here in Valley Center, where I live in the rural area, you guys are actually Santa Fe, we're pretty safe. But when I go down into San Diego, what's it say? I have my heads on the swivel, you know, because especially with the homeless. Those homeless scare me, man. I'm going to go, damn, you know. Gee, your thoughts.
Yeah, so we have the three strikes you're out law, and then we have this, well, I forget the dollar amount, but if it's less than this, it's not really a big deal, slap on the wrist.
956, I want to say.
Yeah, so we bounce back between these two extremes and not really ever landing where we need to be, right? So I'm in favor of this. I'm glad it's passing because I think we need to be tougher on crime. You look at what's happening with California, it's terrible, and we've talked a lot about that in previous shows, and it's good that this is passing.
Exactly. No, I agree. Miss Annette, are you for crime or against it? I'm a terrible host. I don't like, what do you think? I'm like, I put you in that box where you're either damned if you do, damned if you don't.
No, this was obviously a no-brainer for me, but also our DA likes it down here. I love her. And sometimes I'm big on William, that the person I believe in is more important to me than the institution. So, like, if I know that our DA thinks that this is good, I'm like, this is good. This is good.
Well, only time will tell if the California Republican Party can take advantage of America and California's anger to move the change and take the steps to move the state to purple and eventually in a fantasy one day red again. unlikely with current leadership, but never say never. Before we move on, let us enjoy another moment in this week's election. Happenings on social media.
Fucking feral today. Feral!
She's referring to Trump winning the election.
If you see me, keep walking. Do not make eye contact. Do not square up at me. Don't act like you know me.
Like, I want to eat, like, maybe they voted for Kamala, but, like, I want to eat them right now. Like, I want to take a bite out of those glutes in a bad way. I'm...
Today's young liberal. Man, you got this big-eyed look on your eyes. You don't know. You don't want to take a bite out of those glutes in there.
No, that's so disturbing. That's she can't. She doesn't seem okay to me. That's not normal. That's not.
You're gonna hate some of our other videos there.
When she said, "I want to eat those guys," I'm like, I'm not sure they would mind. And then she said the glutes. I'm like, think they mind.
Well, no, Hunter may like it. A drunken sailor may like, oh, I was a sailor. Wrong example. All right. The resistance begins. Blue State Blues. Governors gear up for Trump's mandate. First of all, does he have a mandate? Trump claims he has a mandate. Electoral college and the popular vote win. In today's world where we have split wins, meaning our side tends to win the electoral and lose the popular vote outside of Obama. And Obama did have a mandate his first term. You know, that was the last time we had a mandate. I believe he has a mandate. He won both the electoral and the popular vote. He won the electoral college only, but lost the popular vote in 2016. And he broke the, see, this was one of the big reasons I believe he has a mandate. He broke the blue wall. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Georgia. He flipped the key battleground states. He made significant gains among Hispanic, 45%, Asian voters in some areas. We are going to have control of both houses, it looks like. We had support from blue Democrat voters. I have not seen this much blue support since the Reagan Democrat. You know, so he just, it was like one after another. So immigration, economy and trade, energy and environment, immigration, people want the illegal aliens deported, economic and trade, they want lower energy prices. I'm sorry, that's for energy and environment. For the economy, they want a lower tax rate. You know, they just want, we all align. Gee, does he have a mandate or not?
I'm looking at this tweet from Al Franken, and he said, frankly, I am shaken by the size of Trump's win. I mean, you're talking about people on the left agreeing he has a mandate, and they're scared. And I remember in 2016 when Trump won, the next day there was this, you know, list of 10 racist things that happened since Trump won, and it was like, you know, so-and-so got a swastika on their, you know, doorstep or whatever. Like, and there were clearly made up stories, but it went viral around Facebook. I'm not seeing that this time around. I think people are just like stunned and they're thinking, wait a minute, this guy's been convicted by, you know, okay, 34 counts or whatever, but found guilty by Democrats. So they weaponized the law against him. So, you know, I put a asterisk by all that, which I think, you know, 70 some odd million people do. So, obviously, 70 million, I think the latest count, 73 million, 72 million voters decided, Trump, you take us forward. And the Obama coalition has been destroyed. So now it's up to Trump to follow through on some of his promises, and hopefully he can get voter ID, which is the number one thing in my mind. Because if we can't secure our elections going forward, then, you know, Trump won. But it wasn't because Republicans and conservatives have this very magical message. Trump actually ran more of a, I know Big John's going to, like, his ears are going to start shooting blood, but He ran more. Oh, Trump actually, ran more of a libertarian. Trump ran more of a libertarian and even a centrist type of platform. So this is not a total victory for conservatism. So in 4 years, we need to make sure we have good voter laws in place so that we have a fair shake. I'm not sure that we would without a national voter ID law. In my mind, securing the border, getting national voter ID would be the two top things that Trump needs to do with his mandate.
So you're saying he does have a mandate. Big John, if you want to jump, I'd like to hear your thoughts if he has a mandate. Miss Annette, your thoughts.
Yes, he does. And I just want to take a minute to really be excited about it because he's going to be able to – hi, John.
Hello.
Be happy.
About what? I got nothing to be happy about.
No, I'm excited about this is a real opportunity. And I like what G said, I want to see what he can get done. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can get done. Like, I have faith in him. Until he shows me that I can't have faith in him, I have faith in him that he's going to do some of the things, some of his promises. He's going to bring these things to fruition. So, Big John, what do you think?
Big John, do you think he has a mandate?
Well, look, the Republicans swept everything, so to that extent, he has a mandate.
Yeah.
But considering he has no principles, I don't know what kind of a mandate it's for. It's all going to depend. It's all going to depend on.
Bringing Big John on.
Yeah. We're already seeing that a lot of the things he said 3 days ago are not going to come to pass, right? So, whereas
how's he was that? Talking.
Well, he was talking about putting RFK in charge of all the medical agencies, and RFK is going to run the CDC and all that. And already there's reports coming out that the Trump transition team is making – they're already planting the seeds. RFK could never pass a security clearance. RFK is not going to be near the agency.
I haven't heard that, but my nose was buried in research today. My take on that, I'm not arguing with you because you're right. That could be happening. Yeah. But we'll see. Because the only thing I heard today was that he's going to place that woman – as his chief of staff, the first chief of staff.
He's tossing a bone to try to get some news. But the other thing
is, that woman has some serious chops.
He's tossing a bone to get the coverage that he's saying, okay, I'm going to have the first female chief of staff, right? Already the libertarian / freedom Republicans are upset at him because he's thinking of bringing Pompeo back. Right, so
well, that was a given. See, I always assumed he would have.
No, I understand what you were. Listen, you said whether there's a mandate or not, and Annette said something about seeing if he's going to deliver on everything he promised. But I'm saying history has already showed you what Donald Trump's promises mean—next to nothing. In you know, like there's no wall that was paid by Mexicans. Obamacare is still around. He never reduced the deficit. He never reduced the debt. He never balanced the budget. Right, so. All I'm saying is, yes, Republicans won. They got a clean sweep. But like I said last week, now you guys have to hold your own people to account. In 2016, that didn't
Fair
happen.
Enough.
Right?
Fair In enough. 2016, Why do I bring you on?
Well, listen.
Take them off.
No, listen. I appreciate that Republicans right now, they won. Fair enough. Libertarians are accustomed to losing. We don't win on the national scale, so it's not, you know, it's just another day for me. But I'm going to be interested in seeing how many people now are going to either be super pleased that a lame duck president actually delivers on what he means, or B, a lame duck president doesn't give a rat's ass about anything that he promised and just does whatever he feels like, right? Because that's the position Trump is in right now, right?
Why is he lame duck? Sorry, why is he lame duck?
He can't be elected again.
Lame duck means he's not tied into, I got to watch what I do because I got to run for re-election.
That's better though, in my opinion. Because
in Trump's case, it should be. In Trump's case, it should be. In Biden's case, It's the people. It's like they want to run over him, and he doesn't seem to be able to stop it.
Lame duck implies unaccountability in that, and that's why it's always dangerous, right? Especially if you have a person whose character is not what you would consider solid, right? Whether it's Trump or Bush or anybody else, right? Like if you don't have something that people depend on as your character, that's where you get lost in the lame duck administration.
Do you think he's changed it all, John?
He's 80 years old. Nobody changes at 80.
I don't know. I get what you're saying, but he was a complete newbie in 2016. It doesn't matter who you are, at what age, when you first experience something, you learn the lessons and how he approaches that. What people don't realize is his election team was completely different makeup in both experience and how he went about it. His 2020, he still had the same team because he was loyal to them that got him elected in 2016. And especially that IT guy, they were way over their head. And I'm not saying that's an excuse as to why he lost, but as I was researching the last couple of days, I realized that. I realized his team was completely different. Like that woman who's going to be his chief of staff. I saw her resume the other day. I was like, oh my God, where was this woman? You know, and that you want to hear a woman that says, hear me roar. That's her. Because she's got that butch look, you know. But she's like,
please.
Please. I don't care if she's a woman or a man. It's just, she's like, hear me roar. God bless you, woman. I will hear you roar as long as you can keep on our straight. Supposedly, she doesn't take shit from anybody. And she's already kind of like put him in his place. No, we will do this. We will do that. And Trump was from a perspective. He knew this is last shot. So he was more apt to listen to her because and they say, well, Trump is going to do what Trump wants. Well, I'm going to hear different reports from this woman. And see, that's what happens. You get embellished tales from both sides. Anyway, I don't want to dwell on that. I thought that, John, you were going to come out and say, hey, you guys got both houses and you got every house. There's no excuse. Because that's how I look at it.
No, I didn't say that.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
You guys got no excuses at all. And unfortunately, it's not an unknown with Trump. He had the same, quote, mandate in 2016.
He was also fighting his own party.
Hold on. Let me start over again. He had all branches of government in 2016 when he got into office.
But that's what I'm trying to say, John.
He could have passed anything he wanted.
No, he could have. He should have passed the repeal of Obamacare, but then John McCain, the rhino who wanted him out, raised his hand after he said, I will support it and voted it down. So, no, he did not. He has
so that means Trump's not a strong enough leader, right? Isn't that the William Del Pilar facts or the final analysis?
I will jump in and say I agree with John. If Trump had not pissed off John McCain, then Obamacare would have been repealed and replaced. But McCain did that after running against national health care, after running against it, McCain all of a sudden saved it because of his personal enmity with Trump.
Sure. I did it on his grave. Yeah. I know McCain and Kerry are two people I've studied military wise, and they were both horrible human beings. So I get so mad at the left when they defend them. I go, you guys are, it's kind of like Liz Cheney. Really? You're going to defend Liz Cheney? Democrats? It's like, that's how I view me. McCain was a
no, they're welcoming kid. They're welcoming the neocons into their party so they can have
there
them.
You. Anyway, let's keep moving here, guys. We're at 108. And thank you, Big John. I appreciate it. And thank you for the corrections, too, behind the scenes. Let me get this up. The resistance has begun, and I want to show this picture here. What the hell happened here? Anyway, while I get that, the anticipatory defense, California and Illinois have already come out. Governors Newsom and J.B. Pritzker are preparing for potential conflicts. They're concerned about Trump's policies conflicting with state laws, specifically on climate change, reproductive rights, and immigration. They're preparing legal and legislative measures. Gavin Newsom says, screw you, Mr. Wildfire, destroying L.A. County. I'm calling a special session because I got to print myself for 2028. I got to fight Donald Trump. You know, and Pritzker had some words sounding tough. It's kind of hard to look at him and think his wife respects him still, to be quite honest. You know, so all of this is largely ideological. They gave no examples of what Trump has done to those states in the past. and other Democrat governors jumped on board. Governor Kathy Hochul, she established the Empire State Freedom Initiative. Massachusetts Governor Maury Healey, she's not going to work with him to help with deportation. Josh Shapiro, the now famous governor of Pennsylvania, he called for unity. He said, "I will defend my state." And New Jersey Phil Murphy says he's going to oppose Trump, but we'll look for areas of compromise. So you guys, those are the players. This is their agenda that they say they're protecting. Same agenda that Kamala Harris used: reproductive rights, climate change, and immigration policies. They're going to create task forces, legal challenges, and defend against the federal actions. G, we'll start with you. Is this political posturing, or is there any truth to any of this?
So Gavin Newsom, I believe, is the first one that came out and said, and I told you, and I predicted this, that he wants Kamala to lose, and he's going to be the first one out. There you go, lower left. He's going to be the first one out of the gate trying to make some national headline. And this is what it was. It was, I'm going to be the main person of the resistance. And honestly, like, okay, so the talking point that you talked about, reproductive rights, well, that is back in the state. So fine. I don't think Trump's actually going to do anything nationally with that. That's a lie brought forward by Kamala. So he's not going to do anything there. Climate change, okay, if the state wants to do that, we talked about the proposition of I forgot what the number was, but to put more money into it, I'm against it. But let it be a state thing. I don't want it to be a national thing where we have actually two taxes, right? One at the state level, one at the national level, making this climate change, feeding into two different pots. So I don't think Trump's going to do anything there. Here's where I think Trump is going to face resistance. It's the immigration policies and the sanctuary cities. And the voter ID law, the national voter ID law that I hope he really goes after, that's where they're going to resist. And I really wonder if that's going to win with the voters, because immigration and the economy were the top two things, right? And most of the time I thought immigration is the number one issue. People are looking at this going, wait,
you're wondering if the people are going to align with the governor on this, is what you're saying about it. Okay,
exactly. Yeah. And I just don't think that people are going to align with the governors. I think they're going to look at Trump and say, you do you. We put you in there to stop this insanity. Like, we shouldn't be flying half an island in the Caribbean and put them in our American cities, and then we foot the bill. Like, that doesn't make sense. Let them stay where they're at unless there's, like, something serious going on, like a Holocaust. And then comparing it to the Jews in 1939, That's not fair. So, you know, I think people are going to look to Trump and they're going to side with him. And Gavin Newsom and Shapiro, they're angling, like you said, for 2028. Absolutely. And they need to get their name out there right now, because they got to start their campaign and announce in about 2 years. So the more their name is in the headlights and the spotlights, I should say, the easier it's going to be for them to win the primary and be the main candidate in the general.
Great analysis, G. And he left nothing for you removing. No, I'm kidding.
No, go ahead.
Before we go to you and Ed,
nothing to me. That's true. That was actually really, really great. That was great.
Before we move ahead, though, the bottom left here for the audience, that's Gavin Newsom. the middle left there is the governor, Phil Murphy from New Jersey. That's a weird looking dude. Now, Waltz, you want to use the term weird? There you go. Josh Shapiro is a Jewish superhero there that the Democrats did not want because he was Jewish. And then obviously Kathy Hochul. And the one that's probably the least known there is Governor Maura Healey. And I had to use the biggest slot here for J.B. Pritzker. And, gee, I would just amend to what you said. The top three players right now out of the governors are Pritzker, Newsom, and Shapiro. And Shapiro only because he was thrust into the limelight because of the cycle. So he has a danger of quickly being forgotten. Pritzker has been off and on, but Newsom is nothing but a paper tiger, but he is the most well-known, and he looks the part. He's a good-looking guy, throwback to the 50s with the hair with the grease. The Pritzker, oh, my God, boy, freaking step away from the fringe, man. Step away from the fringe. Miss Annette, your thoughts on the resistance and the governors. Are they just propping themselves up for 2028? or and feeding into the lie? Or do you think there's some legitimacy to Pritzker?
Well, you know, I'm from Chicago. And that's
Annette, did he eat his constituents?
No, that's a big name in Chicago. I mean, they donated so much money. When I worked for Northwestern Memorial Hospital, they were like the biggest donors there. There's like a whole wing dedicated to them. And so I got to know not him, but some of the family when I was living there. But that was many years ago now. I mean, don't they sort of have to do this right now? You know, for their people. This is sort of like I don't know how like real this is. If I was a Democratic governor and knowing that there's a lot of people who are really upset about this loss, obviously, they might feel they need to right now, you know, hear me roar, sort of like you said. I don't know how much is really behind it or going to last. I think at the end of the day, with the kind of majority that Trump has and what he's shown with the popular vote, it's in their best interest to try to work together, right? I mean, they're going to make a stance right now, you know, take a stand. And I get that. I get their voices. But I really feel like it'd be interesting to see them all at least, you know, put out the hand. You know, I'd like to see Paul. But see, that's me in wishful thinking, William. I want to
say that is a humanist in you.
Yeah. Well, I want to see politics change a little bit because I don't see how the really great things can happen for a society. But there's not a little bit of that give and take going. And we know that historically there has been times like that. So it's not something that's not achievable. It is something that's achievable. But we have gotten more divided. We've gotten more divided, though, right? It's been divisive, I think, because of the whole, like, what you talk about, the tribalism. So. Yes.
Well, that's what this is, and Gee, in my opinion. This is tribalism, and no matter how much you wish. What's that saying? About the wish with the hands out, I can't remember, but that's kind of where you're at, Annette. But real quick, as an ex-sailor, you know, to J.B. Pritzker, as an ex-sailor, when you're off doing your manly governor duties and the wife is tending the garden, be careful to what she's tending, brother. Be careful. Yeah. Yeah. She's going to love Latinos, too. Yeah, I cut you off. And then any final words from you on this topic before we move on?
No.
All right, so let us take a quick break here again. You can enjoy this past week with another social media moment.
This morning, feeling spicy. You guys feel spicy? Because I do. All right, I don't know how to use this thing. Let's see what happens.
This is part of the B4 movement, which is a no more sex or no more man type movement that the Democrat women are moving forward.
Cutting off hair. I'm going to have to cut it short than that. Does it down, right? I think that
she doesn't even know how to use a damn razor.
Hair. Let's see here. Maybe I got to cut it. Here we go. Am I giving up America?
Yes.
I'm also giving up on coloring this hair because, right? Fuck coloring my hair. Fuck having my hair be long and luxurious. Fuck all that shit. Fuck being skinny. Fuck being hot. Fuck being all the things.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be a male chauvinistic pig here. Lady, I think you're assuming more of yourself than you should.
That the patriarchy wants us to be. Because clearly, they don't give a shit about us. And I'm talking to you, too. Those of you ladies who have the internalized misogyny required to do what you did. Minorities who are so scared of a woman in power that you'd rather cozy up to the white man just in case some crumbs fall off his plate so that you may eat from them. Yes, perhaps. I don't know how to work this thing, but I'm on my way. I'm going to figure it out. Let's just do some cutting. You know why? Because this is...
That is an angry woman. Hear me roar. Yeah. Now, as I'm watching that, I always do this in front of my wife. They're there in front of the camera. But this is what I hear. That's all I hear. You know, Lisa! I can't. George Floyd. You know, that's all I hear and see when I see a woman like that. And I got to give props to her app. She was all great. That's what she's talking about, coloring her hair. Do you see how young she looked? Wonderful app. Wonderful app. Me and Big John use it. Look at these glorious looking faces we have. All right, let's get back to the topics I had here. The truth threat to democracy let me show y'all this. Move this. This is the true threat to democracy. Listen to this. And guys, we're going to have to interrupt it in a few seconds and talk only for copyright purposes. So I'll be doing that.
In a normal country, we would say, hold on a second. Maybe we need to have a different set of regulations for social media platforms now they're this big.
It would help.
Boom. You hear that? They lost. What's the first thing they want to do? They want to take down our forms of exactly. Who is the true threat? Now, threat to democracy. Remember what I said a couple of days ago? What was the number one issue that was surprising to all of us? The threat to democracy over the economy.
If we could regulate social media, because one of the biggest defenders is D.C. and Congress have not been able to do one thing in regard to the rogue corporations.
Not gonna get
any
better. And then
that is absolutely not true. In 2020, they forced Twitter, the Hunter Biden laptop. Remember that? And then Zuckerberg came to Congress. Please don't bend me over. I just want to stay out of politics, Democrats. Biden bend me over. That's what, you know. So if anybody has had is a threat to democracy, again, they had the past trackable history. What this guy says is the worst of them all.
Moves them through YouTube videos, through podcasts, moves them from that annoyance all the way slowly to a full-blown fascist politics. We don't have the equivalent of Joe Rogan and right. Jordan Peterson to move.
Was it UG? Somebody said it earlier. Oh yeah, who's on television? They like, we need our own Joe Rogan. We don't have our Joe Rogan. You heard me say that. Yes, you did. Joe Rogan was a Bernie Sanders supporter. He was more Democrat than conservative. Yes, you did have it, but you squandered it because you didn't have any respect for any institution but the institutions that you want to put out, i.e. cable and mainstream media, because you can control those.
Move that man in a feminist direction.
Go fuck yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is.
Oh, that's
I
it.
Think.
So that is the true threat to democracy. Your thoughts on that video?
It's crazy that they want to censor online media because that is our voice. Right. They want to have a one way. Like, I can't broadcast on MSDNC or Fox News or whatever. I'm not able to put my voice on there. It's a one way medium. But now when we speak out through Twitter or Joe Rogan speaks out, they want to stop that. They say, well, that's misinformation. Well, no, that's difference of opinion. The reason why it's misinformation in their eyes is because I disagree with them and they're right.
That's right.
So
that's
quote unquote, right. They think they're right. So. And your point is correct. So Elon was a Democrat, and he bought Twitter because
right.
he saw what Democrat Jack Dorsey was doing. Joe Rogan was a Democrat, probably still is liberal. I don't know. Let me back that up. I don't know if he was a Democrat, but I know he's liberal and probably still is. But he backed Trump this time around just because of the elitism from the Democrat Party. So, yeah, this is scary. But luckily, they're not in power right now, so they can't really do anything except – complain and moan about it.
You know, Annette, when I was a kid and I was the only boy with
three
girls. Yeah, yeah, and I was the only kid, I did a lot of reading. And comic books were very heavy on me. It was a good versus evil. Good must always triumph. But even in comics, it showed me you have to have a bit of a yin and yang. You have to have a balance. When the Russians fell, I was like, oh my God, who's going to keep the U.S. in check now? You have to, because when one side is not challenged or one side has too much power, it corrupts, you know? So my point is the Democrats, they just lost their souls, you know? Even in this loss, there is no yin and yang. It's hate, and they still want to control. They think, well, if we control the internet, we can win again. Meaning it has nothing to do with the internet. It has to do with messaging to the people and actually having policies that work and benefit. It's like we're just the nuisance pieces on the table. You know, they just want to control it for power and enrichment. You know, because all these blacks, all these Latinos you see on that video talking about this, they all live in gated communities. They don't have to worry about the 30% rise in that food, 70% in eggs. In fact, Joe Scarborough, I don't know if I have it, was mocking somebody who said Trump's going to win. I just went to the store to see butter. And then he goes, yeah. I was thinking, what an idiot. But I just shook my head. And he said, so what? Butter's $3. And then Mika, it's $7. And then he shuts her off. They're so out of touch. What are your thoughts when you see this? And from you, I want to hear, because a woman's vote is who they're targeting. They want to make sure your daughter votes Democrat for the next 200 years to take from Lyndon Johnson. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I've never had this experience before where my daughter, that I do talk about a lot on the podcast, left our family chat because we're all pretty much conservative and Republican, and Trump won, and she thought that our enthusiasm was too much for her. And then finally she talked to me, you know, separately. And she was really, really upset. And would she be one of those people crying on TikTok? I mean, it was that. No, it's, I said, Bill, she's my daughter. So I try to talk to her. So what I learned from that conversation was how they use fear. Definitely.
Yes.
All about The Handmaid's Tale. It's all about Project 2025. I hope, Mom, that when you see what Trump is really going to do. And she's like, and you know what, Mom? You never thought Kamala was a very good person, but you don't judge Trump in the same way. I said, yeah. That's why I was interested in John saying about Trump being principled or not, and if he had changed. Yes, it does matter to me if he is, especially as the kind of person that I am. But I said, Anna, but I like his policies. And I do think I know what I'm getting with him. Unlike her, where I think she never had an authentic conversation. You know what I mean? She wouldn't go see Joe Rogan in Austin. You know what I mean? Trump did. She had the opportunity to do that. So it's very good for me as a mom and as a human being to listen to someone else's very serious concerns about the presidency. And she's like, and then she said, to drive the point further, and how about some of the Republicans who came out against you in your own party? You know, your people that are Republican and conservative who came out against you in your own election. And Nick knows. Listen, I said that again. Wait, she knows what I'm talking about. So, and how much that hurt. She's like, so you know you can't even, you shouldn't have any trust and faith in the conservative people.
Hold on, Annette. She's saying all this stuff to you. One. Yes. We saw 4 years of Trump policy, and John's right, but Trump also had the greatest economy we've ever had statistically in our history. Blacks, Latinos, Asians, the working wage, which rarely ever moves up. So that was there. And two, she's kind of hypocritical saying you can't trust your own conservative, because she's right. But that's because of human nature. What about what they did to Joe Biden and the threat to democracy were come up? My point is.
No, they're just as
simple. And my final caveat to you, have you cut her off? I think she would really start switching. Yeah. No, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not saying to do that. But people who are subsidized, and you're not the only one, a lot of children are.
Yeah.
It's like they forget that part. They forget that part in terms, so they forget how important the economy is, you know? And I'm not trying to knock her. I'm just saying it just seems so one-sided.
She can listen to reason, though. She can, and she did understand that part of it that you said, that both sides can be equally as ruthless. So we at least got there. She's like, you're right about when it comes to that politics is ruthless and that people can be ruthless. Right. That's the people. So she was good with that. But I'm just saying your first question was, let me see, because maybe I got off track. What was your question to me? It was about.
Well, in essence, what I'm just saying is, who is a real threat to democracy based off of hearing that? What are your thoughts?
So my thoughts are, listening to her made me think that what they've done is getting their power by instilling the fear. The fear, the fear, right. The fear. So now, for the people who have all of those fears, enough to cut off their hair, enough to say that they want to cut themselves off from being a woman by not being with men and cutting off their hair. And I, that's like hurting yourself more than it is doing anything for anybody else in society. I don't know what that is about, but there's a lot of women that are saying that right now. Then I think that they're going to see that their fears are unfounded, but they have been fed a pack of lies. And we have to, if we want to get somewhere, William, we have to at least try to hear from their side. We do, though.
Well, here's how you start. You start by not paying for their college, because that's where most of the indoctrination happened. I'm dead serious. That's where a lot of this indoctrination happened. See, we all laugh about it because it's not going to happen. A parent's going to happily pay because it's part of the American dream. But that's where your kid gets indoctrinated the most. That's where her fear comes in with that college professor.
Are you telling me, though, that if your that if you had children, you wouldn't want them to go to college?
Not anymore. I would not. Not anymore. I would not. Unless they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer. One of those degrees where you need the 4 year to go to the next school. But if after 2 years they come back a liberal, I'm like, son, we need to sit down and talk here, brother. You're going to learn what bills are. And the reason I am like that is because my parents never sent me to college. I went to college on my own. My parents were too hard. But there's a balance, I know. But yeah. I see Americans sending their kids without question to colleges. And then they're like that person in that idiot in the movie who helps the bad guy. And at the end is like, as they're dying, well, why'd you kill me? Why'd you die? Because it's in their nature. It's a college's nature now. They indoctrinate and not teach. Okay, we're at 90 minutes, so we got a couple topics here. That was my goal for 90 minutes, but let's get through these other topics. And Annette, I know when I meet your daughter, she's gonna go, "You're that sorry bastard." All right, so let's take a look here. This one here is the true face of racism, the true face of misogyny, in my eyes.
Have is white women who voted about 52%, right, for Donald Trump, uneducated white women, is my understanding. You have Latino men actually voting more for him, and you have, and black men was not the story, we're not the story here, because they voted almost 80% for the vice president.
All right, so I won't, spoiler alert, she's going to call them racist, call us racist, white women, and then she ignorantly defended the black man because Donald Trump had jacked that up in 2016, and some of them have him at 22%, so he did move it up, but the point is Democrats made no gains, and from a cultural standpoint, we saw the black male start to defy the icons, whether it was Maxine Waters, whether it was Obama. You'd never seen that before, so she's being a bit deceptive there, and then she's saying uneducated white women. You know, this is a woman who lives in her bubble in an ivory tower with gated. She's made it. She's a black woman who made it. God bless her. But now she's become an elitist. She's completely forgotten the true struggle and where she came from, because she's looking at it from an elitist point of view, and she's being derogatory because she's so angry that her side lost and did not lose, got shellacked.
Right. So why do you think that uneducated white women voted against their reproductive health freedoms? And why do you think Latino men voted in favor of someone that's going to deport, says he's going to deport the majority?
Two lies. It's a state's issue with the reproductive rights. That's the fear you're talking about. Another lie is, no, Latino men voted because they want a better economy. And if part of that economy means deporting illegals, then so be it. See, she wants to look at us. No. Well, you don't be leaving the plantation, boy. You stay on this plantation, and you do as you're told, or you're a racist. That's what she's implying. See, I cut to the chase. That's an elitist mentality. That's what my mother dealt with. That's what I saw firsthand as well. Not myself, but my friends and others who dared speak a different thought outside of the liberal thought from the Democrat Party.
His white community. Women like being called uneducated white women. I think the
but
economy matters, national security matters. But when you put people in these boxes, I think that's a takeaway from this race.
She is a vile woman. Okay, and here's the other one.
Talk a lot about these different demographics and these assumptions of where they're going to go. Latinos in Texas, a district that's 97% Latino, went 75 percentage points for Donald Trump. Why?
Misogyny.
Misogyny. She doesn't even wait for the answer, because she's already said in her mind it had nothing to do with the fact that illegals are crossing their border and killing them. They see the brunt of it at the border. But she doesn't want to hear about it. Why? Because she lives in a gated community. She has a security guard when she goes to her penthouse. She doesn't have to worry about the price of eggs, the price of beans, the price of rice, like us Latinos do. You know, so she's so out of touch. In her mind, it's just racism, because that's what she uses as her bludgeon, or as her weapon to bludgeon us. I saw you jerk your head back. You see what I'm saying? She didn't even wait for her to finish misogyny. That's the answer. Hold on, okay.
Right. Oh, it's fine. On the border. It's the misogyny. Border crisis is on their doorstep.
So,
and they were begging people to care about it for years. We need to take some lessons.
That's what that was.
Look at her body language. Look at her body language.
Yeah. I'm sorry. She's a bitch. She's a vile, evil human being. Yeah. Those are the women that I grew up loathing. I saw how they would treat my mother. Like my mother was some dumb, ignorant fool. And I saw, when I see women like that, it just drives me nuts. You know, I had made feminists cry, not on purpose, just because I'm like, you ain't gonna talk like that in front of me. And they cried. Why? Because nobody stands up for them. And when somebody does, all of a sudden, you know, I had to leave a party of my friend. He said, dude, man, I need you to leave. You know, you're making them cry. You know, and I'm like, all right, I'm out of here. And my wife was with me. She goes, why'd you make her cry? I go, I didn't mean to. You know, I just told her the truth and she started crying.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Oh, my gosh, it's Whoopi.
All right. So, quickly, your thoughts on this, G, and then Miss Annette, and then we have...
Well, first of all, she started off on uneducated white women. Okay, so you're demeaning and talking racist about them, right? Looking at them as a homogenous group that needs to say, okay, well, you got to think about your uterus. Never mind that you can't afford butter. That's $7. So that's lame. But then Sonny goes on to Latino men and they're misogynists, right? And they're voting against their own self-interest because of the deportation issue. Wait a minute. If they can vote, they're citizens. Like, what the hell is she talking about? The people who are going to be deported are the ones who are not citizens. They can't vote. And actually, I did see a tweet out there by a person who's here from Guatemala. I think he's illegal as well. And he goes, yeah, I run the risk of being deported, but I got to feed my family. And I think Trump can actually do that better than Kamala. And it was a tweet. I think it was translated to English, but I saw that. And I'm sitting there going, wow, like, okay, so even other people,
even the illegals, are like, Trump!
they're rolling the dice going, okay, well, what's the real likelihood that I get deported? But maybe they do feel a little bit of guilt that they're here taking from us, right? And right. I applaud him for that self-realization, but they're still rolling the dice, right? I don't know how much, I mean, obviously, we hope he didn't vote because he's illegal. But
Trump, I look the other way.
Right. So for them to say, okay, well, they view things through, this is a woman and she's a woman of color. You better vote for her or you're misogynist and you hate color, you know, people of color. I mean, what kind of answer is that? Maybe they're hungry. They want a job that can pay for the food.
But the whole point of that is that she even if they're lost, they're going to keep going. And here's the danger. They keep going on this track. I'm like, beautiful. Cause you will not have your traditional 2-year flip of the House of the House of Representatives. You keep this up and we're going to get a bigger majority. Miss Annette, your thoughts when you see that topic?
Yeah, you keep on going to G first. Have you noticed that this segment? No. So I would say G. Good job, G. You're good. Yeah, the shaming. Yeah, keep it up. Again, keep up shaming all of us for that. And I think when I heard that, because I think that was one of the clips I saw, I was saying to you earlier in the segment.
Oh, the Latino. Yes, was it.
Because I feel like they want the American dream. That's what I think that they're trying to go for. And I think that's beautiful. And I think it's great that some people still have hope that that could actually be a reality.
And Annette, what you said about the American dream is one of the things about immigrants with the American dream is we flee countries from Africa where they slice and dice with machetes and kill people and villagers. That's what they're fleeing. Venezuelans are fleeing oppression who try to come here legally. You know, Panamanians want a better life. And a lot of that, underneath that layer, it's because of the law and order that they believe is in the United States. So when they don't see that happening, and rich elitists who never have to deal with the criminal element like the working class does, it undercuts that American dream. All right, let's close the show out with our final moment, and then I'm going to close the show out.
I'm scared to go to sleep. I might wake up a motherfucking slave.
I'm sorry. No, 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 no. Why?
This is all a prank, right? Like we're just gonna wake up tomorrow morning and everything's gonna go back to the way it'll be a psych. It'll be like a really bad dream and none of this.
All I can say is how fucking dare you.
All right, let's be honest. Those are people, what's the term, I don't know, where they just want attention, you know. Those are flawed tears, they're like crying. But the point is, that's our future leaders. Those are future mothers. Those are future whatever you want to call them. They're nuts out there, you know. So hey,
were there a lot of those?
Oh, yeah, I had the pick of the litter, you know. In fact, I fell down the rabbit hole. I'm always telling Big John, do not fall down the rabbit hole. And I was down the rabbit hole checking them all out. So guys, I want to thank you for coming on. I've been running you, I've been running you through the ringer the last month, but the last year were 2 podcasts a week. So we're going to be getting back to normal. But to everybody else, we are going to be back on our once a week schedule next week, next Friday. We're going to be talking a little bit local politics again. We have a special guest coming on, a mayor. I don't want to give it away because I've done that before. Boom, they cancel on us. So another big show next week, next Friday at 7 p.m. Do not forget, you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as the social media platforms such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. For Mr. G. Mangani and Miss Annette Ross, thank you for tuning in. I am William Del Pilar, and until next week, this is Fired Up, and we bid you adieu.